Welcome, you're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership, and we're live on talkradio.nyc. It's 4 p.m. Eastern in the US. It's 8 a.m. Eastern Australia in Sydney here. And we're at Leadership. We talk every week to leaders, but I'm really, really excited this week because leadership's defined in many different ways. One of the biggest focuses recently, you probably heard if you're a regular listener to the show, that we're discussing this every single time is about what's going to happen in the future. The big predictors. And we've got the big predictor with us today. I hope he doesn't mind me calling him that. Look, trends show us some of the aspects of what's happened in the past. But looking forward is a huge challenge. There's massive, massive change. And here's the thing. Everybody has an opinion, without a doubt. And we've got someone with opinions today, but well thought out and researched opinions. I'm really delighted that we've got the Chief Research Officer of Vistage is Joe Galvin. He's with us today. He's responsible for providing Vistage members with the most current, compelling, and probably, here's the most important part, actionable thought leadership on the strategic issues of small and mid-sized businesses. This is proprietary research as it's focused on the best practices from the exclusive Vistage community. We'll dig into what Vistage is in a moment. But get this, they've got more than 23,000 CEOs, senior execs, and business owners across a broad array of industries in 20 countries. This has really given a great snapshot of lots of different things that are happening in different markets, in different parts of the curve that we've seen especially over the last couple of years. Just a little bit of background about Joe. Joe's an established thought leader and business analyst. From his former roles as the Chief Research Officer for CSO Insights at Miller Heiman, VP of Sales Optimization Strategies at Sirius Decisions, and VP and Research Director at CRM for Gartner. Joe's published more than 500 research briefs and engaged audiences at hundreds of conferences, and he's about to engage audiences in a radio show as well, forums, executive presentations all around the world. Joe, waited a while for this. It's an absolute privilege to have you on.
Well, thank you so much. It's just it's a privilege to be on your show and have a chance to talk with you a little bit. I'm in this really unique position in that as Chief Research Officer for Vistage, I get to tap into the thoughts, the ideas, the strategies of some of the very best small and mid-sized business leaders in the country and around the world. Update your data a little bit. We have over 26,000 members now in over 23 countries. Here in the States, it's over 16,000. We really focus on the small and mid-sized business leaders, CEO, president, business owners, but also the leaders that report to them. And we see even more so in today's world, the importance of leadership and leadership development all the way down to that worker level. And I'm sure we'll get into that with some bits. But I get these CEOs, our community responds four times a year. I get close to 15, 16, 1700 CEOs who share their thoughts on all things that are going on in their world. And we try to focus on the decisions, the issues and the topics that CEOs find most relevant as it's connected to business optimization and leadership enhancement. So we try to create an environment where leaders can make better decisions, they can become better leaders and they get better results.
Since we're talking about Vistage, give a little bit of background. Why CEOs or business owners, business leaders engage with yourselves?
Yeah, Vistage has a very unique model, and there's a lot of other CEO leadership things out there, but what Vistage uniquely provides is CEO coaching and facilitated peer advisory boards. I just spoke to a gentleman in Dallas. We had a big event in Dallas last week. He's been a Vistage member for 3 years. He joined because he felt as a CEO, he was all alone. He had no one he could really talk to. Now he said, I've got a group of 15 CEO mentors, people who are dealing with the same types of issues that I am, but in different environments, non-competitive businesses, but everybody's trying to solve these issues of what do we do about the talent wars? How are you getting over on inflation? What about the rising cost of new employees? This great resignation, transition, succession planning, all these issues that small and mid-sized business owners are dealing with and leaders are dealing with on a daily basis. We create an opportunity for them to not just learn from some of the very best. We've got over 1,000 speakers in our community who are experts on topics, but we think CEOs learn from each other. So I can't imagine this last 2-year period of trying to figure out how to solve the Corona experience on your own because no one's ever been through it. So we've just found it to be real beneficial for our members to be part of our community and the ability to share and learn from each other. And we inside of Vista try to facilitate that every way we can.
Joe, just for everybody's insight, we broadcast obviously from Australia. We're in New York. You're in. Where are you calling in from?
I'm in Connecticut. I'm just outside of New York in Connecticut.
Joe, I'm never sure if we still call in nowadays. If we still call it calling in, when we connect like this, when we connect.
First time, long time.
Vistage is known as the Executive Network. Is that correct?
It was originally called the Executive Connection (TEC), and it's still called Tech in Canada. It's called Tech in Australia. Around 2001, the leadership at the time chose to change the name from Tech to Vistage, which is a Vista Advantage, right? We blur that word because Tech was very much technology 2001, 2002.
Yeah.
So parts of us did and parts of us didn't, but it's still, many so folks were still known as Tech.
Just in case anybody is looking to engage here, it's the Executive Connection, right?
In Oz it's Tech, the Executive Connection. Tech. In the US it's Vistage.
Right. Joe, I hope you're sitting comfortably because I worked out this morning. I probably got about 7 or 8 hours worth of questions. And we're going to squeeze those in an hour. How do you get here? How do you become the Chief Research Officer for a business that is looked up to by business owners? We're talking smart people here. We're talking people who have gone out and done it on their own. People aspire to do what they do, and now they're looking to you.
Yeah, I don't think you plan on being in this job. obviously, it's something that evolves. But for me, it was a progression. I like to think of careers. And I had a career as an athlete. I was a basketball player. I played college. I played professional in Europe in college. I then transitioned and joined and became a professional salesperson. I was in sales for many years. It was while at Gartner, and some folks may be familiar with Gartner, they're the preeminent information technology research advisory firm. I was there in the early days of Gartner. I was in the Gartner sales side, and then for a series of circumstances, transitioned and became a Gartner analyst because I'd led a Gartner initiative to globalize this, a first generation Salesforce automation platform when we were still running on the 28.8 dial-up network back in the mid-90s. It was everything it could be that wasn't. But that transitioned and became a business analyst. And that progressed here after 5 years at Gartner. I joined a company that was founded by a couple guys I'd worked for at Gartner and et cetera. I now work for Sam Reese, who's CEO at Vistage, and I'd worked with Sam at Miller Heiman, who strongly believes in the importance of having this research perspective that is not researching why you should buy a specific company, specific Vistage, but that we focus on what is top of mind to our members. And our members, again, are CEOs of small and mid-sized businesses. 1 to 100 million is probably our sweet spot. Manufacturing, construction, business services, professional services, tech, healthcare, dominant verticals. Folks that are out there driving business, about a third, maybe a little bit more, are family-owned businesses. About 22 to 24% now are female-owned businesses. It's just an amazing community of humans who are all navigating the same, the same challenges that we see of inflation, the supply chain challenges really disturb manufacturing community, construction community, wholesale trade community. So really understanding how these issues all connect into these constituencies. But again, we focus on high integrity leaders, the type of people that are lifelong learners, who never want to be the smartest person in the room. They always want to learn from others. And it really is a high trust environment, where people can bring in the problems and challenges of being a CEO, some of which transcend the business and get into some very personal issues that all of us deal with as humans. And it really becomes this very, very trusted, bonded group. So it's just an amazing community. I've been there, I'll be completing 6 years here shortly. And again, my job is to bring this Gartner-esque approach of business research and analysis, not academic, not that type of stuff. That's not what I do. It's really a business level issue. Say, what is the issue? What's the data that frames it? Because research without data is just another opinion, right? To your point, everybody's got opinions. Well, we've got data. We've got the opinions of this amazing CEO community. And then what are those implications for what people need to be thinking about now? Because it's one thing to be able to say, hey, we know what the issues are. It's something entirely different to be able to say, and here's what the really smart CEOs are doing about it. Here's a litany of things, of tactics that they are using, and here's why and where and how they're using them in the various markets. It's just a fascinating place to be. And I'm just, you know, I'm as a researcher, I'm blessed every day because I get this amazing data from a very unique and specific community that I know is pure because there are members and they self-identify in terms of who they are and their business. And they're willing to answer questions that I ask them. And it's allowed us to explore all types of really interesting topics. We got into business transformation. We got into culture. We got into employee development. We just published a report on marketing last November. Our members said 78% of our community said that buyer behavior had changed as a result of the pandemic. So you think about all the change that everyone's gone through. We've gone through it personally, we've gone through it professionally. All this change. Well, buyers have changed as well. And our community has picked up on that. And what does that mean? Well, it means if you're aware of what this shift is and you can identify how those components are connected to where you are in your strategy, you now have a time advantage because you're aware of it sooner. You can put in plans to act on it quicker. And should it go left or right, you're more nimble to move in either direction as it evolves. Because we're in a time, again, I'm kind of rambling here. Cut me off if you want. But we're in this time of accelerated disruption. I mean, if you just go back 2 years ago, it was ironic because last week we had our event in Dallas. And it was Dallas, February 11th, 2020. And again, a big member event in the Dallas market. When a woman comes up to me and she says, Joe, two of my factories in China are shut down. They're not coming back from the holidays. And they said it might be March or April until they're open again. What am I going to do? And that's when COVID started. That's for me when that moment started. But anyway, we were back on that stage live in person. Just last week talking about the issues the CEOs are focused on, but this concept of how quickly changes occurred that, you know, you look back and you think about, well, the Industrial Revolution over 80 years, a lot of things changed as we went from kind of manual to automated and then technology, but really the internet. You think about the 20 years following the bubble of the internet, where we've transitioned from an analog to a digital world. Now we're in this COVID pandemic, and what it will bring us is accelerated human behavior change. All the trends were already in play before. I've worked from home I could never work in an office again, but I've worked from home since 2010, 2011. I could never go back to an office, right? It's kind of like my secret little sauce. Well, there were areas, tech specifically, who were having people work from home or work, you know, hybrid hours. Now everybody's tasted that. And that's shifted the workplace completely, right? The use of technology like we're on today, right? That was all available, but nobody ever used it. It's great. The woman I work very closely with, Ann Petrick, she and I have worked remotely for 10 years. And it wasn't until we got Slack internally and we started doing Zoom calls and video calls, we started doing video calls. So you've seen this rapid acceleration of human behavior change across all these fronts. And that's what COVID's legacy is going to be.
It feels like we've become a little bit more tolerant of what's going on. I'm interested in digging in kind of about the buyer behavior and accelerated human behavioral change as well. We're just about to go to a break. When we come back, we'll look at these. But also, you threw something a little bit in there as well, Joe. We need to talk about this at some point. Is how do you go from a professional basketball player to this? That was thrown in. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're live on talkradio.nyc. We're brought to you by Dale Carnegie in Australia. And we'll be right back after these.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership, brought to you by Dale Carnegie here in Australia. And we're really lucky today that we're speaking with the Chief Research Officer of Vistage, Joe Galvin. Joe, you mentioned, what a coincidence, you mentioned dial-up. So we were talking in the office, something happened and we mentioned dial-up. And I actually went online and found that, you know, that AOL noise, noise when you connect it and press the button and just let it go. And it aged the whole office because half the office stood up and went, "What's happening?" And the other half went, "I've no idea what that is."
Yeah.
So it's amazing what's kind of happened, and when we've got incremental change in what we expect.
Yeah, we try to deploy a client server based Salesforce automation with remote database sync to someone named Dawn in Des Moines at 28.8. And you can imagine how well that went. they say an expert is someone who's made every mistake possible in a very narrow niche. I qualified for that when it came to CRM based on that project back in the day.
Yeah, listen to me. I can still find new mistakes to make all the time. Look, we're talking about accelerated human behavior. That was one of the things that you mentioned before. It's really interesting being in New York when it happened. I spoke about this a lot at the time, but I remember round about the May, June, July time, probably about round about June, we were all kind of waiting for things to happen, June 2020. And I remember, because I'd been doing some work with Google earlier that year.
Right.
And I remember Google made an announcement that they weren't going back to the office until September in New York. And you could almost hear the gasp.
Yeah.
You could almost, it was almost audible, the gasp. We can't wait till September. And then within about 48 hours, my phone started ringing again.
Yeah.
It was really interesting that kind of everybody's going through like the grief curve, the Kubler-Ross curve. There was the denial, and then they got to acceptance quite quickly of, right, we now need to do something. We can't wait till June, till September. We've now got a deadline. So I found it really interesting that human behavior changed really quickly with one announcement, definitely in New York and New York business community. What have you seen that kind of changed and shifted behavior? Not just kind of that the denial stage, but the right, we need to do something different. Is there anything that's jumped out over the last couple of years?
You know, I think when this all happened, and you all think back to those personal moments of fear, and we all had them. We all were instantly teleported to some movie that we had seen about some pathogen of whatever variation or, you know, whatever it may be. And I think there was a legitimate sense of primal fear that we all felt at some level that this was all spinning out of control. It was going so quickly. Nobody knew. I wasn't in New York City, but I had friends like you. New York was an especially scary place to be in April of that year. And then it passed. And while it was bad, it wasn't an elimination event, to you, to coin a phrase from a movie. But I think during that period of intense fear, we all looked at what we had and what we were vulnerable of losing in a situation. And I think that caused some people to do some reset. We also all got changed, at least those knowledge workers who could, the non-essential employees, those who could, were transported to a very entirely, completely different work environment and work model. And we all kind of learned through that. Mm-hmm. So we all went through this shared trauma and this shared work transformation. And now as we come and we approach the other side, it's kind of like, you know, some of this for some people, it required a real hard rethink of what they're doing. And this goes all the way through. Your hourly employees are able to walk across the street for $2 an hour more, maybe a better working condition. Or, you know, it used to be that getting Amazon was when Amazon would compete in your market. Now getting Amazon is when they drop a distribution facility in your town and they suck all the workers out of your business, right? So hourly workers have places to go. Skilled workers, if you're a truck driver and you've got your truck driving license or some of these other carpenter, you can pick your shot. There was a nurse who, you know, a high skilled nurse who left the job because didn't want to get vaccinated. And now as a traveling nurse, making more, working less. So there's opportunities that for hourly, for skilled, and obviously for knowledge workers to move up. I just heard stories last week of, you know, about mediocre people getting massive pay raises to go to another company. So I think people have gone through this, but you also have to look and see that coming out of 2008, 2009, Great Recession, there were 10 applicants for every job. Now there's 10 jobs for every applicant. Yeah, that power shift has been completely over, has moved now from the employer to the employee. This too is an entirely new experience for CEOs to try to figure out, well, how do I address this shortage? Because it's hard to find people. When I lose someone, it costs me more and it takes longer to get somebody with less experience. So you have all these dynamics going on, and we're, you know, getting onto this behavior change that everyone's kind of rethought. And when you combine that introspection with the best hiring market for an employee, as the skilled ones, it suggests you've got a workforce revolution going on. You know, they call it the Great Resignation, but that's just because we can track quits, right? This is people don't quit unless they have somewhere to go. Now that may be retirement for this bulge, this last 4 to 5 year bulge of baby boomers, and maybe some people leaving the workforce, but by and large, it's not a resignation, it's a migration. People are going, it's a from to situation. And what's really interesting is our most recent data, we saw the percentage of organizations who retention was increasing, was growing slightly. And the percentage of organizations whose retention was getting worse, growing just a little bit more. So there's movement. It shows there's movement in the workforce. And I don't think it's a trend that's going to play out anytime soon.
I'm really curious because you'll be really, Joe, I hope you're impressed. I did a bit of research before we came on here. Not to your extent, but I noticed a paper that was published in February, that saying that the main focus, and you published it, the main focus and decisions that were needed to be made by CEOs and business owners were around hiring, recruitment and talent and technology and everything like that. Everything made sense. We talk about the Great Resignation and the migration. Until I realized you actually published this in 2021. Now, everybody was talking about the Great Resignation towards the last quarter of last year.
Right.
And this became this. This, you've been asking your CEOs, and they were talking about this last year, 12 months ago.
Well, you know, we try to stay ahead of what's really going on. And again, I think what's unique about the Vistage community and my role is that I don't just get the heartbeat, but I get the blood pressure from what's going on in our CEOs. And they've been talking about these issues, and this has been coming up. So we've been trying to, there's a couple of things we need to accept. And that is that, you know, we live in this time of accelerated change, and that we have to be conscious of our subconscious, because you don't have a lot of time to consider these massive decisions, right? There's not a lot of experts out there. You don't have a lot of experience training on this. So you have to be conscious of your personal biases, but you also have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. You think about this, no one no one in our generation has ever dealt with inflation like this. So no, it's been 40 years, right? A hiring scarcity like this, we haven't dealt with. None of us has ever dealt with a pandemic in our lifetimes. And yet these are the forces that are driving and propelling our culture and the business climate forward. So making decisions has never been harder than that, because there's no path. We lived in this really nice period from the end of the Great Recession until 2020, where every year, you know, the markets grew, the economy grew 1 to 2 to 3%, you know, unemployment slowly came down. You know, it was the quintessential all boats rise with the tide. And then somebody pulled the plug and the water ran out and we had COVID. But what was different is the economy wasn't broken. In 2008, the economy was fundamentally broken and it shed jobs. In 2020, we shut the economy off. And we let people go. We turned it back on just as radically. It took 8 years to recover the number of quits following the Great Recession. It took 1 year to recover following COVID. So we were already in the early days of the talent wars. Mm-hmm. That Lexington and Concord event was probably around 2015, 2016, when the rate of quits surpassed what it was before. But it's jumped radically. And again, it's people looking for a better life, a better balance, a better mix. I call it work-life alignment, meaning that, you know, I need to align these two things. And I don't want them to intersect. I don't want them to, you know, become one, but I need to make sure they're aligned with what I want to do. And again, as you go through this, what's important to you evaluation that we all did at some level, I think it's gotten some people to really think about it. And in turn, it's put tremendous pressure on CEOs, because people have choices and they will go and work in environments consistent or more consistent with how they want to live.
You mentioned the groups that you have, and the two words you mentioned was high trust. Mm-hmm. I'm curious where that kind of plays out when we're thinking about talent retention and everything, because my guess is if you're building high trust within your peer groups, that filters into the business as well. So this isn't just kind of a one-off. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk me through how you achieve that, and maybe what you see different to other businesses?
Yeah, it's about trust and integrity and leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the attributes of a leader is again, these are things that we teach. I shouldn't say we teach as much as we engage with our members to talk about what it means to them in those words. But we talk about people that are making decisions based upon what's in the best interest of their business and the people that work for them, their families that rely on not just the executives, but everyone who works there, their families and their livelihoods, and the communities that they prosper in. You know, you think about the impact, you know, is it 70% of all workers work for a small or mid-sized business? Mm-hmm. You know, your big companies, they dominate the Wall Street Journal headlines, as they should. But if you go town to town, across the country, around the world, it's the small and mid-sized businesses that are really the backbone of our economy and all economy. So when you have leaders who are focused on making decisions from a place of personal integrity, when employees feel they can trust those leaders, you now begin to bleed into those attributes of culture that have become more important than ever before, because I can go and find a higher paying job. I can probably find better working conditions. But what's more important than ever is, what am I a part of, right? What is my workspace, meaning where do I work, how do I work, and who do I work for? Specifically, who's my boss? So we're seeing a lot of shift now with people looking at leadership development much deeper into the organization, recognizing that for the worker employee, the most important person in their life is their boss, mm-hmm. right? Traditional management, industrial era management, say, bosses defines my task, here's the activities, here's how much you should do, here's expected results. That's the classic industrial era boss. But now it's evolved that these line leaders, they have to be leaders as well. And they have to be able to be coaches, right? A leader is going to set the tone, tell you where to go. The leader is going to connect that culture that the CEO is trying to amplify from on high, but bring it into that work group. That's what that manager has to do, is that leader has to do. Manager has to hold people to task, but coaches help people improve performance. Now you blend that with this remote environment. It's a very different world for team leaders.
We're just about to go to break. Let's dig into that a little bit more, because one I think an important thing that you, after the break, one of the things that you said there is what it means to them. the kind of the honesty and integrity, how it shows up in them, because there is not a single formula for this. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. I am so pleased. We are so lucky to have Joe Galvin on from Vistage today. The show is brought to you by Dale Carnegie in Australia, and we'll be back after these messages.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Listening to The Mind Behind Leadership, we've got Joe Galvin with us from Vistage, or if you are listening in Australia, it's known as the Executive Connection here. And just in case you want any more information, which my guess is you probably will do after this discussion. As I say, I picked up just you said something, but I don't hear many people saying it. We start to talk about behaviors and traits of leaders like honesty, integrity, etc., and that's almost a given. And I rarely hear people beginning to define it or beginning to think about what it means to them. But that was something you jumped on there. You say that it's what it means to your CEOs, your members individually. Just talk us through a little bit more about that, Joe. I can't quite hear you at the moment.
No, that's me. My bad. No, I said there's two aspects to it, Graham. One is the actual experience that occurs inside a Vistage group. Each group goes through a series of activities and events that define group rules and boundaries. Yep. And one of the keys is the ability to have trust inside that group so you can say what you need to say to get to those issues. But if you take that concept and now apply it as a leader in the out in the workplace, leading a company, leading a business, those aspects, those words like integrity, like trust, they tend to get allocated the way words and culture do. And that they've got broad definitions, they get painted on walls. Rather, what is most powerful is the behaviors that leaders exhibit. This was especially true during the darkest days of the pandemic, is that humans look to their leaders and how they behave and how they act. And are they saying what they're saying and doing two different things? You know, adherence to varying different protocols or whatever. People don't need clarity as much as they need someone to provide direction that they are going towards something. And especially in times of challenge, in times of fear, we spoke about fear earlier, people aren't watching you with one eye. They've got both eyes on what you say and what you do. And that's when you can't fake integrity. That's when you can't fake honesty. You can't fake empathy. That's when you have to get out and be real. And it's even tougher it's tougher for everyone in this environment because you're doing it in this little, you know, 6x9 square or rectangle, right? As opposed to, you know, some people are charismatically able to just walk around the office and touch people and talk to people. Other people in their own different ways, they do it differently. But now everyone is forced into this box at a time. Again, you go back 18 months ago when there was a fair amount of trauma going on. And what happens is, and we said this at the time, was that employees will reward or punish their workers, their workplace, once this passes, right? No one leaves a hurricane, no one leaves a storm, a boat in the middle of a hurricane. But once the storm has passed and everybody's back at the dock, yeah, people will change. And we said that employees would reward or punish their CEOs. And we're seeing that in our data. We're seeing this movement on retention data, where we're seeing some organizations are increasing their retention rates, while others are seeing their loss of people. Their retention rates are getting worse as people leave. And in this world, it's a zero-sum game, right? I lose someone because you hired somebody. And that's what's going on in the spiral, which is why we come back to, you talk about leaders. There was an MIT Sloan study that said, balanced out against compensation, right? Money's money. But it's a toxic culture that drives people away. And who determines your culture most dominantly? Well, for the worker, I'm an hourly worker, I'm a skilled worker, I'm a knowledge worker. It's my manager. It's the boss that I work for. So there's this growing awareness of what is the connection or disconnection between a corporate CEO level culture about the words that we stand for, our mission, our vision, our purpose, you know, the level of trust that is the energy behind this. And then what culture exists in the work group that I'm in? Because it's not just the integrity of the CEO, but if integrity is one of those values rooted in culture, then you would expect that would be exhibited at the line manager level. So what are you as a CEO doing to ensure that line manager is bringing forward that? And that's a recognized attribute, versus having the individual fiefdoms that go on in most places of individual work groups.
You've just reminded me of a business that I was working with in New York just before the all this hit. I did a lot of work with a company called Poppin over there. We had Jeff Kabat, the CEO, on as a guest a couple of years ago. I need to get Jeff back. It'd be really interesting to see where they've gone. Phenomenal business, really high energy, really smart thinking in the market. When all this hit, they sell office furniture. Guess what offices weren't using? Office furniture. It was a huge shift. And unfortunately, they had to downsize. And I'll never forget, at one point, Jeff and I had a long conversation about this. I was on LinkedIn, and I saw someone that I knew, this long post about how Poppin were a phenomenal business, and the people they'd met, and they were so grateful. And it wasn't until the final line that I realized the person had been released from the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
But everything, about three or four paragraphs, were just talking about the culture, amazing people, and thanking them. This was somebody in the middle of everything that we're going through as an employee, losing any security that they had, still felt that the culture and everything was there. Now, Poppin, they've grown back up again. They're expanding massively. They've really come out there strongly. But it was just that moment that an employee, which must have been so tough for them,
still felt,
and this was a common theme, it wasn't the only one I saw, it was the first one I saw, that people were posting how phenomenal business was.
Well, hopefully in the resurgence that person was able to be hired back into that organization, they wanted to come back into it. But, you know, you think culture I describe it as it's like gravity. You can't see it, but you feel it with every step. You talk to, you know, some of the, we've got an excellent collection of speakers who spend all their time just on culture. And they'll tell you, they walk into a company and they can feel the culture, right? It's very, it is very tactile in that regard. Well, it's kind of like gravity, right? It is that unseen force that holds really good employees. Or in this case, you had to let an employee go, but they came right back because that gravitational pull. It's that same gravity that repels people. And most importantly, it's a gravity that will attract people in your market who might want to work for a business like yours.
And Joe, I'm really curious about this now. When we're talking about business, we're talking about CEOs, we're talking about predictions, we measure things. We instinctively measure, we look for numbers, we look for patterns, we look for all this. Gravity is really difficult to measure.
Yeah. How long is a piece of string, right?
Sorry?
I said, how long is a piece of string?
Yeah, exactly. How do you allow your network to kind of access that thought process where you can go into someone and the gut feel is good that we should act on?
Well, I think it would begin with a discussion of your worker level employees. Mm-hmm. You know, one of our CEOs tells a great story about he was new to the company. He was a new CEO. First day he came and he got in the parking lot at 6 a.m. And he just sat there in the dark and he watched to see people's behavior as they came into the building. You know, who's sitting in their car until the last minute on their phone, or, you know, are people coming in early, or are people just making it in? And he learned, he said, I learned more about the culture of the company in that 60 minutes than anything. And he was able to then bring in, begin to make the changes to get people connected to it. And I think, you know, again, we come back to the lessons of this pandemic. It's about connectedness. I think we all got connected, maybe in some ways not so good, but with our families and the people that are most important to us. You know, and a lot of people, again, went through this job evaluation thing. And again, it challenges leaders in ways no one's been dealt with, had to deal with this before.
We've spoken a lot, which we actually do in this show, about engaging teams, engaging people. I'm genuinely really excited that we're talking about behavioral change and not just statistics, etc. One of the things you mentioned at the beginning, I think the statistic you said was 78% of buyers have changed behavior. Is that correct?
We asked our CEO community, you know, have buyer
behaviors you see change.
Yeah. What's that?
What are you seeing that's changed?
Well, this is the acceleration of trends that were already in place. The movement towards digital. Buyers today are more autonomous. They're more eager to do their own work. They are less willing to see a salesperson, partially because they weren't in the office and now they're not in the office as much, but partly because they don't want to go down that path. Now, there's a continuum of products to solutions, right? A product can be bought, a solution must be sold. So this is not all things. If you're buying a box of safety gloves, right? That's different than providing for a consortium of 50 hospitals in the major metro area, right? But on that continuum, you're seeing this continuous shift towards autonomy. So you see a real shift in SMB spending on digital marketing. The importance of SEO, the importance of positioning, the alignment. The sales and marketing alignment conversation has been going on for a long time, but it's now become even more important because this shift in how much marketing interacts with the digital customer until a salesperson comes. This is in the B2B sale, until a B2B salesperson comes in and connects. Mm-hmm. So at what point, at what progression of knowledge is the buyer at when they actually talk to a seller? And that's what's changed, because it's not like, you know, in the old days, I started selling back in New York City in the 80s, you know, you'd knock on a door and you'd start selling. There was no internet. There was no technology. Now the buyers have, again, accelerated through this period of time. You know, some of our folks rely on the big industry events, the trade shows, and boom, those are gone. Now they're coming back in a different form, in a different volume. But if that's how you did your business, it's created tremendous change. So the key word is change. The adjective is accelerated, and it's driven this level of disruption, forcing us to think on our feet and be more nimble than ever before.
It feels like kind of the digital marketing, SEO, etc. So it's a credibility piece up front. The people need to be that comfort level needs to be there before they engage in a conversation. We're going to go to a final break. Let's keep talking about kind of what we should be looking for going forward. I'm not going to hold you to this, but given what you said last February, I'm quite comfortable that we're going to be in the right ballpark here. And I do want, talking about ballparks, I do want to talk about ball games. I want to talk about basketball before we leave. Listen to the mind behind leadership. We're speaking with Joe Galvin from Vistage. This is brought to you by Dale Carnegie in Australia. We'll be right back after these.
Join us every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern for the Mind Behind Leadership, where we focus on what leadership really means to us and to others. We have practical discussions with the CEOs of some of the world's largest companies, owners of small businesses, and experts in psychology and behavior to get that inside track, what to do, what to avoid, and what really happens. Join me, Graham Dobbin, at the new time, 4 p.m. every Tuesday for the Mind Behind Leadership, here live on talkradio.nyc.
everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Behind Leadership. We're speaking with Joe Galvin from Vistage. Joe, one of the things, kind of one of the messages that I've been using here, and I talked a lot to leadership teams about, is holding your nerve. Is kind of having, we spoke about gut instinct, and just like if we feel something's right, keep going with it until something's it. It's about getting some consistency in for the teams, but just even when it's not going right, hold your nerve. What should we be looking out for in the next few months? What's your network telling you?
Well, I think we do something called the CEO Confidence Index, which takes a measurement of six different factors. We've been doing it since 2003. It generally runs 3 to 6 months in advance of GDP. So it's a really good indicator, because as our CEOs comment on their thoughts on the economy, looking backward, looking forward, their thoughts on their profits and revenues, and their thoughts on investments and hiring. And we blend those through to create our index. And our index in December was basically flat from the prior quarter. And I think that's attributed to the, I call it an economic tug of war going on right now. You've got some real positives, historically low interest rates, unemployment's down, revenue expectations are up, and you got headwinds of inflation and supply chain and COVID and the talent scarcity. So you're trying to figure out what's gonna go next. And I think the headlines that I see, and this is just based upon the research that I do and the people I'm connected to, that we'll see the bad numbers get a little bit better, and we'll see the good numbers come down a little bit. We work with ITR Economics. They use the phrase decelerating growth, meaning we're still growing, just not as fast as we were. Okay. So what I think is going to happen is by the time we get to second half of this year, assuming there's not another Omicron out there, some other wave, some other black swan event we couldn't see, that we'll go through a reset. We'll enter a period of kind of, okay, here's the new benchmarks. Here's the new level for employees, for expenses. And we'll kind of do a reset, catch our breath, and then we'll see another growth spurt up into 25, 26 maybe. So I think part of it is we created this thing, we called it a Corona curve, which is really just an inverted bell curve that said, here's where it triggered, here's where it happened, down to the bottom, the path up. And now we've kind of, our index shows, we've kind of peaked, and now we're settling into a new plane. So we're approaching a new plateau, I think, where we'll have a chance to catch our breath. The winners will continue to lead, and the losers will try to catch up. And then we'll be poised for growth. And you'll look out to 23, 24. I remain incredibly optimistic. I think there are good things out there. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean the turmoil going on in the Ukraine today couldn't take a really nasty turn. Yep. It doesn't mean that other geopolitical global events couldn't occur. But if you were to attempt to take a black swan off the table, then I think we're in a pretty good position, especially for small and mid-sized businesses, provided you can get the people to drive your business. Humans are the fossil fuel of growth. And that's why it comes back to the major decisions, the major investments, and the top leadership challenge was all about recruiting, hiring people, and then supporting that, of course, is retention. So folks that didn't make the investment in culture and aren't making the investment in leadership development before are going to find a challenge to keep up, because I think organizations that can present a compelling employee experience will be best able to compete for employees as we go through this next kind of positive economy, right? It's, you know, the employee experience is set by the culture at a corporate and team level, a workspace I'm in, and flexibility you provide me, and who I work for.
Flexibility, we could do a whole show on flexibility, Joe, because it could, I hear how much flexibility employees want and how much flexibility is really practical within different businesses. It's really difficult to turn around and compare businesses and compare movement to the market.
Well, and it's really a radical shift if you go to this hybrid model, because the days when people are in the office, you have to make that worth their while.
Yeah.
You have to create office FOMO so people want to be a part of it, right? I mean, you know, folks giving up the commute, I mean, that's just an obvious one, right? But when in the office, is it energizing? Is it positive? Does it make me better? Am I developing? Am I engaging? Am I collaborating? What's that office experience like? Because if just going and sitting in a cube, I don't need to do that. Don't make me do that. And that's this accelerated disruption of what the new workplace is going to be like in this new reality.
Which is probably exciting for the two of us, because there's such a passion for both of us, and it's the area that we're constantly evolving. Right, we've only got a few minutes left, and I need to come back to this professional basketball. But now I'm going to make this tenuous link that we're talking about teams and offices, and obviously you started off being a member of a team. Talk to me about being a professional basketball player.
Yeah, well,
you don't look that tall in this little.
And I realize I don't sound tall either, but this is my superpower's been taken away. I'm actually 7 feet tall, at least I was back in the day. Age has kind of brought me down a little bit.
Wow.
But I was a high school basketball player in Illinois. I played college basketball at Illinois State. I was the 100th player selected in the 1980 NBA draft, a Spanish team located outside of Barcelona, a town called Juventud. Saw me, went over, played 3 years professionally in Spain, was going to go for a fourth year, and some things went sideways with the club. But I went from playing in front of 9 or 10,000 people in the Final de la Copa del Rey in May of 1983 against FC Barça to knocking on doors in Lower Manhattan in November of that year, selling Sharp, Ricoh, and Panasonic copiers for a subsidiary of a Long Island biz office products company. And then I got into Xerox 6 months later. But yeah, like I say, I went from the penthouse to the outhouse really quick.
But what was that experience? How did that experience help you when you're beginning on a business career? Because that must have been a big change.
It was a massive change. And you see athletes go through it today, because especially in today's hypersensitive world, it becomes such a part of your identity that all of a sudden it ends. Right. And you'll see it. You know, I'm a big college basketball fan here in the States. Our college tournament's coming up, and you see these seniors playing their last games because when they're done, they're not going to play more.
Yeah.
So it's just a real powerful motivator that's part of your identity. And all of a sudden it ends. And how do you transition? Well, I always knew there was going to be another thing for me. I took basketball as far as I could. I learned some amazing lessons that you can only learn in that team environment. About winning, about losing, about working together, working hard, common goals, all that stuff. You learn about limits, both physical and mental, that you can approach. And as you get higher and higher up that chain, it becomes more and more intense and more challenging. But I think the lessons I learned as a college athlete and the realities taught to me as a professional in Spain helped me to better prepare to enter the real world and to be able to put forward the consistent and focused effort to be able to find my path to get to the best job on the planet that I have today, which is working with CEOs from Vistage to better understand what's working for them.
It's interesting because I'm just thinking, I was actually listening to a podcast last week. I think it's called Sporting Chance. There's been a charity started in the UK for ex-professional sports players about how they transition maybe into business, how we get that kind of mindset, how you go from 50,000 people cheering you on to nothing on a Saturday afternoon. So I suppose one of the things that kind of jumped out to that was the inconsistencies of it. You knew in the back of your mind that this could be your last game. You could get an injury. There was anything could stop it. Whereas in business, we don't think like that.
Yeah, it was a concept of that, the transition from college to professional, is that you're now playing for food. I mean, literally, you're playing for food because you get the rebound, he doesn't, you get a better contract than he does. And that was a very challenging transition from the college when we were all on the same team. But it's again, the world of athletes. They learn things about hard work and dedication that make a difference. I happen to work for a guy who was a world-class distance runner. Mm-hmm. So we share some of those same, athletic beliefs. Yep. And, that culture that has a lot, so many positives to go with it. It's a defining part of your life. And we see so many kids today come through high school, college, and other sports, and they move on. They learn the right lessons of hard work and teamwork and all those things.
Joe, I can't thank you enough. I'm looking over. You've probably seen that I've been scribbling down lots of things. 78% of buyers have changed their behavior. What else? Create office FOMO. Not heard of it like that before, and absolutely. Okay, give people a reason to come back to it. And culture is like gravity. I'm probably going to use those. I will give you an attribute. I'll attribute to it to you the first time, then it's mine.
Okay. Well, you know what, that it's you're just repurposing and improving a good idea. It's the half-life, the half-life of fresh ideas is about zero in today's world. So the mere fact that you would consider it's a compliment, I thank you for that.
Joe, quite genuinely, I think that as we move through this year, there's going to be so much changing. I'd love for you to come back on the show. I think there's probably some really, really great insights that we can do. And we've been speaking with Joe Galvin, who is the Chief Research Officer of Vistage. In Australia, here in Australia, it's known as the Executive Connection, just in case anybody is looking to connect with them. Thank you to Kyle, who's kept us all right in the background and making sure that technically we've been great. Thank you to Dale Carnegie in Australia for making this show possible. You've been listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. Okay. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.